Hey, folks, in this interview, I'm sitting down with my good friend, apparently of about a decade, Mr. David Duschenman. We're going to be talking about some of his latest adventures and some of the latest projects he's involved in. This is TWIP. Hey, welcome back to This Week in Photo. I'm your host, Frederick Van Johnson. An interview like none other is coming your way next. A friend of mine, David Duschenman, who is in many ways kind of like the North Star that I shoot for in terms of being an amazing photographer, content creator, educator, and all those things. Traveling the world, making good images, and teaching people how to do it. That's what David Duschenman does, and he's on the show today to talk about why he does that and some of the stuff that he's involved with. David Duschenman, man, welcome to This Week in Photo.
Hey, Frederick, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Good. It is good to see you.
You too.
Haven't seen you in forever. The last time you and I spoke, you were recovering from that crazy, horrific fall you had. You were on the tail end of recovery from that, I think.
Oh, it's got to be. We got to talk. We've talked before. But anyway, we were talking about this before the show. 10 years. It's like it's gone by. It feels like, what? That was like last year.
Yeah, I think it goes by fast because it's like, you know, I see you. And I see the stuff that you're doing, and we feel like we're in contact, but we're not really in contact because the internet sure. glues us, right?
And we all feel like we're 18 years old still. So
I am 18. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm 18. Hopefully, I'll be able to drink soon. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, you just come to Canada. We started 18.
There you go. Well, folks that who may not know who you are, or David, you're credited with a lot of things, right? I mean, you started this company called Craft and Vision, and you kind of pioneered the idea of creating high quality, impactful, sort of heavy calorie ebooks, but at a low price, right? And yeah, I remember when I interviewed you back then, you had a very specific reason for doing that because you thought, you know, ebooks are way out overpriced and the publishing industry is X, Y, and Z, but you're gonna swim upstream and do it this way. And you had some really good success with that, right? So where are things now? Where is David Duschenman in the world of Craft and Vision and all the other things that you're involved in? Give me the elevator pitch. We got 40 floors on this elevator ride. Give me the pitch.
Well, I'm credited with a lot of things. It's all lies, I can assure you. I was one of the early voices that was creating high quality, as you said, high octane ebooks. And I was doing it because I kind of felt like everyone deserves a chance to, you know, to learn this craft in the best possible, easiest possible way. And the only problem was eventually there were many, many imitators, not imitating just me, but others that were creating fantastic ebooks at a low price. And soon they became you know what you want to do when you're in a market, any market, especially as photographers, is you want to find that niche where people are not getting value. Mm-hmm. And I found that people were telling me for a long time, oh my God, these cheap ebooks are amazing. They're amazing. And then they started saying, I've got all your ebooks and I don't have time to read them all. Mm-hmm. And these ebooks were short little high content, but not deep, not super deep stuff. And eventually I realized now what is missing in the marketplace is the depth. There is a lot of $5 ebooks, mm-hmm. and free content. There's a ton of free content and it's good. There's like really good free content. What there is not is a lot of depth. And so I have changed my focus to maybe be less broad and focus in on certain things that I am passionate about, certain topics, certain ways of teaching, and to go as deep as possible. So the model's almost completely flipped on its head, and things are now much more expensive. But then you don't need to buy 100 of them. You mm-hmm. just buy, enroll in one course and go deeper. And on top of that, I've added a very specific private community that allows me to mentor people more one-on-one, because what I was missing was the conversations, the back and forth. I was missing the opportunity to look at a student's work and say, hey, you know, I want to celebrate your progress. I see where you've come from here and now you're here. I love what you're doing. Maybe critique an image. So my focus has gone deeper. And I don't know if that's indicative of the industry in general, but things are changing. You know, it used to be there were like hundreds and hundreds of blogs. Now blogs are out of fashion. And now we're getting all these little sound bites, you know, where little YouTube videos and little tiny Facebook posts and Instagram. And it's all very shallow little bits. And I don't say that to criticize. I just mean it doesn't scratch my itch. So I've gone deeper.
That's good. I mean, yeah, because in a lot of ways you hit it right on the head. Back, you know, let's say 10-ish years ago, that it was, you know, there was a need for that. There was a need for sort of the bite-sized, you know, just sort of whet my appetite type content. And, you know, I don't want to go deep. And then, you know, like you're the classic entrepreneur that sort of skates to where the puck is going. It seems like the puck is going to be in a place where, yeah, of course, there's YouTube and there's a mountain of content. I can never, in an entire lifetime, you can't go through that amount of content just in the photography on YouTube. So that itch is scratched. The ebook market, like you said, that you pioneered the low cost ebook, that itch is scratched. What's missing, like you said, I think, is deep diving. And if people want to learn how to do something specifically, and then you know, and sort of not learn it just from okay, this is how you make a so and so, let me show you real quick, and then move on. But to take them by the hand and show them the intrinsic methods by which how to do that, and then add the community aspect to it, I think is brilliant. So how does that manifest? Like are you live now with this community / school, or where can people go to check that out?
Yeah, well, I am live now with it. It's for temporarily, or at least until I find a better solution. It's just a private group on Facebook, and it is only open to those that have taken one of my mentor class workshops online, my courses. You know, I hear a lot of talk about, you know, master classes, and mastery is something, of course, I think we should achieve, but it's not something I really want to call myself. I'd rather focus on mentoring, and so I have a couple of courses that are currently online, and one is Master Your Craft. I think it's at masteryourcraftcourse.com. The Traveling Lens at thetravelinglenscourse.com. And I've got a couple others that are in the works or not currently publicly available. And the advantage of them is it's not just that it goes deep, Frederick. It's that we all have different voices as teachers. It's not like I'm right and someone else is wrong. It's that I have certain strengths and I teach with a certain focus. Mm-hmm. You know, I talk a lot about vision. I talk a lot about creativity and pursuing things a very individual kind of way, rather than here's tips and tricks and shortcuts. That's just not my gig. And that's the beautiful thing about being able to go deeper, is you can give students more of yourself. It's not about, you know, I'm deep and they're shallow. It's just those of us that are choosing to become more available to students are allowing them to get a bigger piece of the thing that they want, rather than just cherry picking from a bunch of different voices, which can be overwhelming and distracting. I would prefer just to say, hey, let's work on something together for a while. You know, let's explore composition. So I have a course called The Compelling Frame, which is all about visual language, and it's a deep dive. But on top of that, there is the ability to be part of a community, talk about these things, talk about photographs, talk about your struggles. And so that's how it manifests. I've got some online courses that are available, and you'll find those currently available. If you go to like craftandvision.com, mm-hmm. you can see what's currently available, or get on the mailing list and find out when they come. But I think it's important. One of the things that we have missed as photographers is we assume that because we may be brilliant photographers, and I don't mean myself, I mean others, but we may not be good educators. We may not even like teaching. And yet we figure it's easy money. And so if someone gets online and does a course or an ebook, for me, I love the teaching. Like the teaching lights me up. I want to use, you know, I look at my audience as you know, I've always joked about wanting to be a cult leader, and I don't think I'm too far off. I it's more than photography for me. It's helping people live more creative lives, be more fully awake and alive in this world, and using a camera is one way to do that. And I love that opportunity. I think it's something that is, for some people, not everyone wants that, but for some people is missing. And to have a place where they can go, where they focus, instead of listening to 20 different voices and checking 100 blogs, they come and they have a place of, dare I say, sanity in this crazy photography world, yeah, where they can just concentrate on the things that they feel like they need to and not be distracted by a million different, especially the really technical stuff, which my audience is kind of like, I'll learn the technical stuff as it serves my vision, but I really am more interested in how do I make cohesive bodies of work? How do I be more creative? You know, sort of bigger picture stuff.
I love that. Maybe the next iteration of Craft and Vision might be Craft and Focus. Look at that.
Craft and Focus Vision, but that would the logo would have to be really big.
You got to change everything.
It wouldn't fit on a T-shirt or anything.
So, David, tell me about this. So, you wrote a book back in the day called a while ago called Within the Frame.
I did.
And the book did really well. I have a copy of it here. It did really well. And so I'm curious to hear from someone who's sort of in that world, the world of digital publishing, physical publishing, and now transitioning or adding the sort of distance learning to the mix. Where does physical publishing fit in there? You know, a lot of people say, you know, you got to write a regular physical book because that becomes your calling card and it legitimizes you as someone who knows stuff. Is that still the way, or does it serve a purpose, or is there revenue there? What do you think?
I don't go into it because you're gonna make money for sure. But is it still the way? Well, it's still a way, and I would say I'm still publishing. I have another book coming out sometime this fall. The 10th anniversary edition of Within the Frame just came out at the beginning of March. And it's important. It's important for a couple of reasons. One, my publisher deals with foreign rights contracts. So, for example, I write Within the Frame, and before you know it, there's a Polish edition and a French edition and a German edition, and I could never do that myself. So in terms of if I want credibility as a publisher, yeah, it's important that you have stuff for me, that you have stuff in print with a hardcover, because ultimately anyone, or this is the perception, anyone can publish. Mm-hmm. And it's true. But there is still something that people see when you go into Barnes and Nobles or wherever, and you can pick up a hard copy of a book. There's something in that I think is really important, at least to me. I grew up around books. I love books. I vastly prefer to read a book, despite the fact that I published digital ebooks. I'd rather read a paper book. I hate to say it, but I spent so much time on displays that at the end of the day, I close my office and I turn the lights off on my studio and I pick up an actual honest to God hardcover and I read a book. You know, it's just, I prefer it. I like, the experience is better. I like to underline things. I like to circle things. And if I do that on my iPad, I just end up with a really marked up screen. So,
yeah, I mean, it's reflected light versus transmitted light, right? You get to actually use a lamp to read a book. Imagine that, right?
Yeah, it's that, but it's also the tactility of it. It's the turning of the page and the weight of the book on your lap. And yeah, it's an experience, I think, that's just, it's different. I'm not suggesting one's better than the other, but there is something, I think there's a reason why there's such a resurgence of desire for the analog experience. There's a reason so many people, photographers that never shot a frame of film in their life, are suddenly picking up, these bizarre crowdsourced or crowdfunded film stocks and playing with them in old Mamiyas and Hasselblads and Contact 645s. There's a reason for that. There's a tactility that we crave that the digital experience has not given us. And I feel the same way with books. So yeah, I think it will always be important that there are paper books out there. You know, your laptop can crash and lose your whole library. I can still walk over to the bookshelf and pick up a copy of my book. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think it's possible for photographers that are just, you know, sort of, they've just been bitten by the, you know, I call it the radioactive spider of photography, and they're just sort of discovering the world of photography and they're excited about it. Is it, you know, not to say that people that have been in it for decades aren't excited about it, but they have that sort of deer in the headlights dove kind of look, you know, about photography and, hey, I want to get better at this. I want to be like David Duchemin. What is the path to get to, you know, let's not say mastery, right? Just to get to competency, to get to a place that you can consider yourself a semi-professional or professional. Is it physical books? Is it, you know, ebooks? Is it YouTube? Is it, you know, signing up for courses? What's the path to get good?
Yeah, the answer is yes. It's all of those things. We all teach differently as a teacher. As a learner, we all learn differently. Some people among my audience have told me, you know, I'm not a YouTube person. I don't like the videos. And others are like, well, you know, I've never read one of your books, but I love the videos. We're all different. Mm-hmm. The most important thing, I think, is mastery comes, and I'm not afraid of the title. I just don't want to assign it to myself as a master, but I do pursue mastery of my tools. Yeah. Because with mastery comes comfort and competence. And with those comes an ability to take risks and to be more creative and to express the things we want to, rather than focusing on the damn dials and the buttons, you know? Mm-hmm. But in order to do that, it comes with focused attention. Focused effort over time is what brings mastery. And so learn whatever you want to, but just remember that at a certain point, you cannot learn to be a photographer, to think like a photographer, to get the muscle memory of a camera in your hands by watching YouTube or reading all of my books or taking a course from me or someone else. You will learn best by picking up the camera, making a lot of photographs, failing, mm-hmm. looking at those photographs and allowing them to give you feedback and saying, this worked for me, this did not work for me, I'm going to go and try this. And rather than focus on rules, forget the rules. Focus on what works, what does it accomplish? So this is when I teach people to critique an image. I don't care whether you like it or not. And that's that's how every critique starts. Oh, I really like that. I don't care if you like the photograph. The question is, how do you feel, like really feel about it and why? What is it in the photograph that makes you feel that way? Like it, don't like it, that part's irrelevant. What is it that makes you feel that way? Is it the balance? Is it the tension? Is it the placement of elements? Is it the horizontal aspect ratio or the verticality? Or what is it? Is it the juxtapositions and the contrast and all of this language? If you ask people to talk about photographs, it becomes very apparent. We know a lot about cameras and we don't know anything about photographs. Yes. And I would say you've got to study photographs. You've got to make a lot of photographs. You've got to fall on your face and fail. And then you've got to buy books of photographs or go on Google and image search anyone that you can think of. I mean, just if someone, Ansel Adams or Robert Frank or Dorothea Lange, or I mean, pick a photographer and study them, study their photographs. Ask yourself, why does this work? Why does this not work for me? How is the photographer using their optics, their shutter speed, all the pieces that move, and how did they put them together? If you can do that, you have a better shot when you put the camera to your eye of understanding things like how to assemble the elements and how to expose. Not, I don't care if you have a right exposure, whether your histogram is right. people want to feel something. And that's when I first started, I learned by looking at people's settings. I would read a book and I see the image and I say, 1/500th of a second at F8. Great. And I would go and I would replicate it. And my pictures look nothing like that. Mm-hmm. They're F5/500th of a second. F8 did me no good because the settings, it's a myth that you can learn from settings. Because what you really need to know is, why did he choose 500th of a second? Or speculate, guess, why F8? What did that accomplish in the photograph? And more importantly, what was the camera tell? Did the camera tell him to do 500 and F8? Or was the camera screaming like, oh my God, you're underexposing by 3 stops. But he chose it because it gave a certain look. That's more important information. That is how we learn photography, not mindlessly mimicking settings. So I'm not suggesting settings aren't important, but they're like this little piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. And the rest of it is so much more important. And we, for some reason, we, and I've done it in my own books, we put a book out and we say, here's how I made the photograph. Well, knowing the camera, the lens, the shutter speed, and the f-stop and the ISO is not remotely how you made the photograph. It doesn't talk about the decisions and the vision behind it. And it, that is how we learn, all of us, whether we're at the very beginning or after 30 years, that's the path that we take toward mastery.
But then, and that makes perfect sense. Overlay onto that thinking, though, the sort of rampant, you know, gear-itis or gear acquisition syndrome that people are afflicted with more now than, you know, the last time we talked.
Sure.
Because there's new cameras and new bodies and new drones and new lenses and new strobes and, you know, that are just sort of flooding the market all the time and confusing new people and in a lot of ways short-circuiting them, I think, in some ways. What's your advice to people that are, you know, they're you know, the newer people that are just coming in? They're like, you know what, I want to shoot like Scott Kelby. I'm going to buy everything Scott Kelby has, or Joe McNally. I'm going to buy all the gear that Joe shoots. It must be Nikon day. I'm going to get everything Nikon. What do you say to that? How do you get away from being focused on the gear and the tools, the hammer and the sickle, versus the actual thing that you're trying to convey, the message?
I just think it's really important that we fall in love with the photographs more than the method of making them. If you can focus on, like, to me, you know, you go onto these forums, and I'm not foolish enough that I go onto these forums anymore, but it used to be you go on and there would be, you know, Nikon Lover 89 would be the, you know, the username. And then underneath they'd have this list of all their lenses and cameras. So like, as if that would impress. Who cares? Like, you want to impress me? Show me your photographs. Like, concentrate on the thing we are making more than the thing we make. And I realize there are some people that's just their thing. They are not musicians. They just want to collect guitars. Totally fine. I have three guitars in the corner of my office, and I keep, you know, I sort of have come to believe that if I just buy another guitar, my playing will magically get better. It doesn't. It never has.
Yeah.
What it will do is maybe bring some of the excitement back. If I've got bored, I'll pick up that new guitar. You know, I went to the guitar store the other day just to buy some strings. And I got strings, Frederick. I got six brand new strings, but they came attached to a brand new Les Paul guitar. I can assure you, my version of Brown Eyed Girl has gotten no better. It's still a very, very poor rendition. And what I would say is, because I've been there and I still am there clearly with my guitars, it's a substitute. When we're frustrated, when we bump up against the hard work, it is easier to get onto the B&H catalog and order something than it is to punch through that difficult stage and just be content with your, you know, when I started, we didn't have these options. I mean, I couldn't afford them. And I had already a 20-year-old Pentax Spotmatic. I had a couple of lenses that were not zoom lenses. I had the same film stock every day, and I just went and made photographs. And I would say it is very, you're right, it is very easy for us to get distracted by gear, and there's nothing wrong with gear. You know, I have, unfortunately, you know, I came up with this whole idea of gear is good, but vision is better. And every time I talk about gear, people say, I thought you said vision was better. It is, but I still love the gear.
Right.
It's just, you got to give it its proper place. It's not even that you know how to use that gear. It's that you know what to do with it, that you can experiment and take risks and be creative with it. You know, go buy all the cameras you want. Just don't fool yourself into thinking Brown Eyed Girl is getting any better just because you buy, you know, the latest guitar.
Yeah, you're not gonna be a PGA golfer just because you bought a new set of clubs, right?
I am still a very bad guitar player, Frederick, and all the guitars
but
in the world
love
are
it,
not
though.
Gonna help. I love it, but that is just it. As long as you love it, as long as you persevere, and as long as you know the difference between learning to play the guitar and having a credit card with which you can buy guitars,
right?
You know,
right.
Learn to think like a photographer. Don't worry so much about whether it's the, because the new camera comes out and we're like, oh my God, it's the 5D Mark 12.
This is
the best camera ever. I must have it. Well, didn't you say that about the Mark 11 and the Mark 10 and the Mark, the 10D when it came out? Why are the pictures not getting better? Because we're spending more time on the B&H catalog than we are looking at the works of some of the masters and becoming visually fluent. And
but how do you do that? I mean, you mentioned think like a photographer and becoming visually fluent. How do you do that? Is it just immersing yourself in what other photographers that are where you want to be at, what they've done, and looking at their work and sort of attempting to do that kind of work? Or is there another way to sort of get in the mindset of a photographer?
I mean, there's a lot of ways, Frederick. I mean, hopefully you could find, I mean, the idea of apprenticeship and mentoring is mm-hmm. a fairly old-fashioned idea, but I think it's valuable. But I think ultimately, this is the beauty. There's no secrets. I mean, you can pick up the work of Elliot Erwitt, and you can look at and study an image every single day. But when I say study, I don't mean Instagram study. I don't mean flip, like, flip, like, flip. Mm-hmm. I mean, open the book, look at a photograph, and ask yourself, not what would you do? Do you like it? Don't you like it? These are next to irrelevant when you're learning. Ask yourself, what is the photographer trying to say? Does this photograph work? Why? Why not? Even if you hate it, what choices did the photographer make? What is he doing with tension or balance, or where are the contrasts in this photograph? Is there a story, and what makes it powerful or not powerful? Mm-hmm. Like, there are no secrets. It just takes being a little introspective and putting the time in and looking at it and saying, let's get past the first question, which is, gosh, I wonder what camera he used. Who cares? Mm-hmm. Asking, what was the choice of lens and why is a better question. Asking what is the exposure and was it different than what the camera was asking for? Asking then, why did the photographer stand where the photographer stood? Were they low? Were they close? Were they high? What did that do to the relationship of the elements in the frame? It's just simply being aware and starting to dig deeper and not being satisfied with the easy answers. We all say we're self-taught, but usually it just means we watched a bunch of YouTube videos. I think we can do better. I think we can dig in and, yeah, maybe stop looking at, you know, the photo magazines that are full of tips and tricks. They don't help us.
And secrets. And
the secrets and the gimmicks and all. Lead us to believe the next issue will have that article I really need. The 10 must-have landscape lenses. Oh, this is there are no secrets. The secret is stop chasing the shortcuts and just knuckle down and start thinking about photographs. You know, pick every, instead of spending that money on yet another DVD series or whatever it is. Do they still sell DVDs? I don't know. But, you know, yet another magazine subscription. Once a month, go on Amazon and buy a book from a great photographer. But, you know, get Alex Webb's The Suffering of Light and get Robert Frank's The Americans. And, you know, I mean, buy a book by Avedon and Elliot Erwitt. And just once a month, buy one book and study it. Stay off Instagram. Stop. We consume images. We talk about how valuable they are, Frederick, but Instagram is so hostile towards pictures because we've learned to do this. We just flip and swipe and swipe mm-hmm. and swipe.
Yep.
Nobody is actually digesting. And we have also, I think, the great harm of Instagram, and I'm on Instagram, but the great harm of it is that we have built up this expectation of ourselves that we should be sharing our posts constantly, creating and sharing and creating, and we share so fast, we don't have time to even react to our own work. You know, we're asking others to like it. We're not even sure how we feel about it because we only made it 30 seconds ago.
What's the cure to that, though? What's the cure to that crazy cadence?
Slow down.
But if the expectation on Instagram is to fire hose and, you know, just keep pouring, you know, your quote best work on there, and then, you know, for someone to sort of just swipe through and go on to the next cool thing, if you slow down, It's kind of like the Lance Armstrong effect, right? If you slow down, then everybody else is going to keep going. So you have to do what they're doing, right?
But it's not a race. I mean, the Lance Armstrong effect, I mean, that's all well and good. But this is not the Tour de Friggin' France. This is photography. This is art. And it is not sustainable. I'm telling you, it is. We will all burn out. We will create work that is less deep than we are capable of. Yeah. We will not learn to appreciate, and it just becomes a junk food culture where everyone's trying to replicate each other. And I like Instagram, but I tell you what, I'm not sure it's healthy for us. I have had to curb my use of social media because I was addicted to it, just like everyone else. And I realized this is not helping me. It is pushing me to away from creating my best work. It is distracting me. It is forcing me to look at photography and the creative process in a way that I think is not just unhealthy, but actually destructive to the creative process. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what I would say is, look, Instagram is not, it's not actually that valuable. You know, I know if you're a professional, you want to have your stuff on there. But look, what would be the harm in posting once a week? You know, oh, I won't get as many numbers. Well, you know what? Those numbers are actually pretty meaningless. Mm-hmm. They don't convert. They're not buying your work. They're not the editors and the clients. They're just bots and porn stars. Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. You know, you have this many followers. This number is the meaningful one. And they are not missing you. If you only post once a week, they're not sitting there with their phones going, oh my God, when's Frederick gonna post again? Mm-hmm. When's it's been 7 minutes. Come on. You know, we gotta just relax. I think we all need to slow down. And I'll tell you where some of this thinking came from me is by a book called an author called Cal Newport, who wrote a book called Deep Work. And his thinking about not just about how we create our best work, but also the effects of things like social media and how they distract us and keep us from. And it's not the fault of social media. It's our fault because we're, you know, inside we're 3-year-olds that can't handle the new toy. Mm-hmm. And we're like, we don't want a little bit. We want all of it. You know, it says, the fire hose of Instagram. Instead of going, you know, I'm going to follow 10 people and enjoy their work. I mean, I'm one to talk. I follow 900, but I'm cutting Instagram like, it's this little sliver of time I spend in the day because I've recognized that it's hurting me. It's making me compare myself to others unfavorably. It's making me spend more time doing something that is not contributing to my craft. I'd rather be out making photographs or studying photographs. And occasionally I go onto Instagram and I interact with people and I love the interaction, but the likes, the obsessive nature of it, I think is harming photographers and is harming their craft.
I love that. Very well said. All right, I want to end with this. So I want to get an idea. Normally, I ask guests what's next. You know, what are you working on next? What's the next big thing that you're gonna thrust upon us? I want to flip that a little bit and ask you, what is David Duchemin's end game? Like, what are you shooting for? Because I've seen the trajectory over the years and you're innovating, like I said, skating to where the puck is going to be versus chasing the puck. And you're doing it again now. So what, fast forward 15, 20, 30, 40 years, what does it look like for David Duchemin? What do you wish things would sort of evolve into?
Well, let me say this. I appreciate your assessment of me, but I don't even skate to where the puck, I think the puck is going. I skate to where I want to be, and I hope to hell the puck comes my way.
Oh, nice.
Here's an analogy. It's not an analogy. It's a story. I was 6 years old, and I was like any Canadian boy. I was put into hockey, and I was thrust onto the ice and told, the point of the game is to keep the puck away from, you know, we were the red shirts. Mm-hmm. Keep it away from the blue shirts. And I tried desperately not to get the puck. The last thing I could barely stand up. And it's like, oh, the puck is coming to me. And the puck came to me and I sat on it. I mean, I got it. And I thought, this is the most efficient way of keeping the puck away from other people. And I sat on the damn puck. And so now not only are the parents on the one side of the rink cheering for me, the parents on the other side are all yelling at me. The referees finally had to come and physically remove me to get this puck out from under me. that's how I play hockey. So that should temper your understanding of the answer I'm about to give you. I actually don't care where the puck is. I don't care who is cheering for me. What I want is to be doing in every moment. I want to be doing the thing that I feel like I need to be doing, whatever that work is. I don't know where I'll be in 20 years, Frederick. I don't know where I'll be in 10 years. I mean, if you had told me 10 years ago that I would have not only written a book that became a bestseller, but then have more books. I mean, I got done with In the Frame. I went, well, I guess I'm done with that. I just, you know, I couldn't possibly write another one. I don't have another book in me. And I just, books just keep coming out like, there goes another one. So I don't know, but I'll tell you this. I love the creative process, and I love the act of making things. Will I even be in photography the way I was 10 years ago? Because I'm not now. You know, I was a humanitarian photographer then. Now I do very little of that for a number of reasons, and I've done a little bit more conservation stuff. I've done a little bit more, stuff that's just kind of random travel, cultural stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Part of me, this sounds weird, part of me kind of goes, will I just be a novelist, you know, sitting in my house writing the great Canadian novel? I don't know. What's that about? Moose antlers and igloos or something? I don't know.
And maple leaves.
Yeah. Oh, God, there's no novel in that. That's just that's a tragedy. That's like a Shakespearean tragedy. But I don't know. What I do know is that it's less important to look ahead and see a trajectory and go, where's the puck going? And more important for me to say, am I right now where I want to be and doing the work now that is most important to me? Today, if I'm writing a book, forget 10 years from now, am I doing what I want to be? Am I writing the best work? Am I going as deep as I can and doing everything I need in order to do that? That to me is the most important thing. That is where creativity gets fun. It loses its, you know, all that angsty stuff I've had over the years, and just becomes very deeply happy making.
Love it.
Yeah.
So
that's where I want to be.
People, you know, you mentioned a couple of the projects that you're working on. The Master the Craft that's a course that you're working on. The Traveling Lens, it's another course that's out there. Where are they located? Or do all roads lead to Craft and Vision? If we just go there.
Yeah. If it's up and online, it should be on craftandvision.com. The travelinglenscourse.com is actually, I don't think it's up currently on Craft and Vision, but you could go to the travelinglenscourse.com and find it. And then the one that I'm currently making is actually called Making the Image, and that's my biggest project yet. And it'll be, if you're on my newsletter mailing list, I send out articles about photography and creativity on schedule every 2 weeks. And at some point, eventually, I will announce Making the Image as a course that's available. But it's not there right now. And the other thing is the next book, which is The Heart of the Photograph. And I'm really excited about that one. That one, I think, is, you know, you asked, how do people learn about this stuff and the visual literacy? The next book is going to be a lot about that in a deeper way than I've approached before.
I love it. David, thank you so much for coming on, man. It's my head.
Man.
My head always, whenever I talk to you, it's like, oh yeah, I remember, my head explodes when I talk to Dave. Because you're just like, yeah, not, I mean, you're an overflowing fountain of information and inspiration, you know, when I talk to you. Well, you know what you do and you love what you do. It's refreshing to meet someone that is doing photography for the right reasons, right? I mean, you know, or what is the right reason? Is the right reason you're just doing it for money, and if there was no money in it, you wouldn't do it? Like, for you, I get the feeling that if you weren't making a dime from photography, you would still be compelled to shoot, just like you'd still be compelled to pick up that guitar and play Brown Eyed Girl badly, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It's not about the right reasons, it's about my reasons, and as long as everyone is doing things for their reasons and they're happy with it and it pushes them to deeper work, and that's all you can ask, you know. So
yeah, I love it. David Dushman, thank you so much, man. I appreciate you.
Thanks, brother. Good to talk to you.
All right, peace.
This is Twitter.